CliffCentral.com. We've been involved with a show that Jacques Basson started ages ago. You started this in England, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You started this when you were in London.
Three years ago, the engine started. Not the launch, but yeah, three years ago.
97 shows.
Yes.
That's very impressive. Jacques Basson is here with us this morning. He's the brains behind and the host of Klip Koers, which is our first Afrikaans program on CliffCentral.com, which we launched probably about a year ago here.
Well, April.
It's almost a year.
It does. It's
so over before you know it.
Yeah.
And Klip Koers focuses on weekly conversations with entrepreneurs, impact makers, and you guys pretty much develop practical business and life advice. And you talk to people who are, I suppose, the best mentors you can find. And you hear their stories and you get to ask them all the tough questions about how they got there, what they've done right, what they've done wrong. It's very interesting stuff. What made you want to do this? How did you come up with the idea of putting these shows together?
Well, it's twofold. I think the primary reason is lack of practical business skills. And I always tell people, you know, you go to school, always had an interest in business. So I knew I would study business. So you go to university. I did went through the hoops, developed my pool game, drinking game, got a degree. And then I started in the workplace. And then I realized I knew nothing.
Yeah. It's like a baptism by fire.
Correct. And then 10 years later, two different countries, five different industries, senior level, incredible companies. I start my own business, and then I realized how little I know.
I mean, you talk about big companies. You started with like Coca-Cola in 1999, right?
Yeah, it was a phenomenal time for us. We were known as the Kusile Managerial Development Program. And we were only 18 students at a time each year that were selected for this thing. I got selected by accident. I sent out my CV to Coke. Coke never recruited in Bloemfontein.
Yeah, you were in Bloem because
I was in Bloemfontein, yeah.
You're originally from what? Riebeekstad?
Yes. Just outside of, well, not Welkom, Kroonstad. We always joke, right?
No one lives there except you.
I mean, and Zama's. I was making a joke this morning. I was telling Celeste.
Zama's are those illegal miners.
Yeah, right? So I'm calling Zuma.
Yeah,
for that reason. He's illegal gold miner. So
But okay, so Riebeekstad, then you went to study at Free State University. You apply for this job at Coca-Cola, and they actually said yes.
Yeah, well, it is. I sent my CV, but again, it was one of those things that, you know, 98. I was realistic of, well, at that stage, I mean, ironically, I thought 20 years ago that the odds were against me completely as this Afrikaner boy in Bloemfontein. And I made a decision that I will not settle for any job. I will do my very best. I put together this CV, which in hindsight, I don't know, is madness, but I use photos. I scanned. I remember going to this graphical designer who scanned in photos. I mean, this is a big deal. 20 years ago, scanning in.
I mean, for a CV, they must have thought you're trying too hard.
and then I had this list, and it was Coca-Cola, BMW, Toyota, British American Tobacco. I mean,
all the big companies.
The big companies. And I started sending out, and I only had 20 of these CVs made, all the money I had. And I started sending them out. And one letter after another, I got them back saying thanks, but no thanks. Like, you know, I was fortunate to get.
All of them said no.
Yes. And it got to the point, I had this fabulous, I wish I still kept those letters. I had a lot of them. And I made the call that if I get on the plane and leave the country, it would have been the country that didn't want me. I remember this dramatic scene. It's like, Totin, like, South Africa,
fine,
you didn't want me.
Asshole.
I'm a POM now. Yeah. And then I got this call from this little company called Coca-Cola, and they said, come in for an interview. And I drove through. As a matter of fact, I wrote off my car.
Oh,
my mate drove me through from Bloemfontein.
Oh, no.
Old Barbier. And yeah, I got dressed in Coke's driving lot here in Parktown.
Yeah.
First interview, asked me to stay over. Can I stay over? Come back the next day. Came back the next day. Next thing, they flew me in.
Huh.
Assessment test, and then I had my final interview on a Sunday morning, 11 o'clock, in Port Elizabeth.
What did they want you for?
I don't know. I was the white token guy. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right.
I was the only white guy. No, but I'm
joking.
What did
you want to do for them?
I wanted to really, I mean, it's the same with the podcast. I wanted to, you know, just be world class and do things different.
Mm.
It's always been, it's just being world class.
But you ended up working in marketing and management, right?
Yeah, I didn't even know sales and marketing existed. I mean, it sounds crazy, but
yeah.
When I got involved in key account management, so dealing with the pick and pay buyers, ShopRite checkers, so I didn't know that side of business existed. I didn't know the whole concept of a buyer, that if you want to list a product at a supermarket, you need to get past the buyer.
Yeah.
This is a classic.
People don't. We don't. What does a consumer know about that stuff?
Well,
right?
well, you would like to think a business graduate would know that stuff.
They don't.
And I don't know if it's changed in 20 years, but they don't teach you that. But I just discovered this thing, you know, key account management. I loved it. It was working closely with the supermarkets, getting the products in, marketing. At the time, we were a brand new department known as non-carbs. So we launched all the non-traditional products, healthy products, Bon Aqua, Minute Maid, Bebo, the kids drink, Powerade formed part of that portfolio.
Yeah.
Play, the energy drink, which failed miserably against.
Did it?
Yeah, it was, you know, they played the price game. And if you look at Red Bull's, never played the price game. Non-negotiable. Pretty much Coca-Cola philosophy, but you would like to think that with the powerhouse that Coca-Cola is, that you would, now you've got Minute Maid up against.
So that was a failure.
Yeah. We were giving a product away. I mean, I don't know, now they got bigger packaging and all the rest, but
they're still there.
Still there. But, we were just discounting the hell out of the product all the time.
All right. So then you did decide eventually to go to the UK. So
yes.
What made you make that decision?
It was sense of adventure. My wife was there in the 90s with the good old working holiday. So
yeah.
She saw Europe and I did a bit of traveling. I say traveling. I was with Parmalat. I was export manager for Africa. So I got to see Africa. I guess the closest for overseas I got was Mauritius at the time.
Yeah.
But there was this travel bug. And again, it's this love of learning and meeting people and learning new things. And we decided, we got married, first year of marriage, and we said, yeah, let's give it a go. And so we left here for adventure's sake.
Well, it's also when you're there, you can travel through the rest of Europe. It's really close. It's really cheap. You get to meet different people. You're not just in your own tribe. That kind of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, the biggest sacrifice, and we'll get there. I mean, for us coming back after 14 years, I would say the biggest, one of the biggest sacrifices is cheap and easy travel.
Yeah.
And that privilege to literally jump on a plane, spend 2,000 rand return for the family of four and quickly pop into Copenhagen. I mean, it's amazing.
So. All right. But what made you decide then to leave there and come back here permanently? Because you were there for 14 years. You would think that's pretty much what you have to put in if you're going to stay somewhere for life.
Yeah.
It's very rare that people will come back after 14 years in a foreign place. They'll become like furniture there. Right?
It is. I mean, if I look back, to be honest, I sometimes find it hard to believe that I survived there for 14 years. But you don't survive for 14 years. I say survive. You don't live in a place 14 years if you don't enjoy it.
Yeah, you wouldn't have just eked out an existence. You
no,
would have been miserable.
No, absolutely. So, no, the podcast played a major role.
Is that because you were connecting with South Africans the whole time?
In a big way. I was doing business for the first time in South Africa.
Mm.
Not just holidaying in South Africa. I was spending my pounds here. I was indirectly creating jobs. And I think the more I started spending time with these entrepreneurs, as a matter of fact, I you know, these Facebook updates, this was my fourth October in a row in South Africa.
Huh.
Yeah, fourth October in a row. So I don't know why I'm here always in October, but it, you know, 4 years in a row being here. And I think something just started reigniting.
And this is obviously a thrust of your podcast too, because you're interested in small businesses, entrepreneurship, the lessons of business. Was it also because you saw opportunity here?
Absolutely.
A lot of people who live here don't see that.
Yeah, it's a if I have to oversimplify our reasons for coming back, I say it's 60% it's our country, our culture, our people. 40% is business.
Well, you've always been a proud Afrikaner.
Mm.
You're proud of being Afrikaans. You want to put effort into the history and culture of Afrikaans, and that spirit of. And really, Afrikaans people can there's a lot in our history that they can be very proud of in terms of being pioneering, you know, building infrastructure, farming the land. They're things that Afrikaans people do really, really well and should be very proud of. Is that part of what you also think contributes to that Afrikaner spirit of entrepreneurship? Because it's a powerful thing.
It's an interesting question, Gareth. I think there's – the one realization, you know, 3 years with this podcast, I always say, and I've said this to a few people, entrepreneurship in the Afrikaner, entrepreneurship is not as alive and well as we would like to think. You know, we've got this Boermakerplan and because we've got Braaivleisvuur,
yeah,
wisdoms. The bulk of the Afrikaners are very much corporate animals still.
Being employed or correct, employing.
Correct. Okay. So there's still that mindset, that industrial revolution mindset. We need to go and get a degree, and then we'll go and get a job. Now people know you're not going to get a job, but for some reason they still think it's a good idea to go to Tux and study business, which I find, you know,
but
incredible.
It is true that we don't just need entrepreneurs. We need people who can work in the corporate environment. You need people who can fulfill those roles and obligations. Not everybody should be an entrepreneur. It would be a disaster.
Fact. And I always use the term entrepreneur loosely. When I say that, for me, it's thinking. It's you've got the whole discipline of entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship.
Explain.
Intrapreneurship is an employee thinking like an entrepreneur. Okay. It is problem solving. It's that bring your A game. Self-starter,
right.
But you can't start a business. And I agree with you. Everybody cannot start a business, but you can think in a similar way. So there's been this movement, I think, for the last, I don't know, 3-4 years or so, the whole thing with, and it's typical American, I don't know if Stanford probably came up with it, but the whole thing with entrepreneurship. So I want to, okay. For me, it's about stimulating both. So where you've got the entrepreneur, that there's the, I guess, the support to build the next business, to improve the business, or to just have great CEOs and leaders in their day jobs.
Okay, but you interview people who are indisputably people who have done incredible things in their own businesses and in their own lives for their people, their country, whatever it might be. What are you looking for in those interviews and those discussions? And by the way, if you could download any number of these by going to cliffcentral.com and you'll find clip codes and you'll be able to hear these discussions. I mean, why do you talk to these people?
Well, it's the nugget. I always look for that little, what's that one piece of advice, whether it be how they get up in the morning, what software they're using, how do they think?
So do you always find it?
Yes.
Do you know when you found it?
Yes.
Well, I mean,
it always starts with me. So,
okay,
if I get a nugget from it, I've learned something,
sure,
I know.
Course, then the rest
I know, but it starts with me, basically.
So, what kind of stuff? Give me a few examples of things that other people have told you about their lives that you've started incorporating into your own.
Well, the immediate example that comes up, and that's a trick question, Gareth. But a guy that comes to mind, I've actually had him in for a second interview, and I rate him highly.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Jaco Gerrits. And Jaco Gerrits has got his main, his big product is Crash
Insurance.
Detect. Crash,
yeah,
Detect.
Yeah, okay.
It's the whole thing that sends, yes, out a, if you crash in the middle of 3 o'clock in the morning at Beaufort West, you know, this thing sends out a distress signal and they pick you up because it's people die. I think 12%, he mentioned at the time, 12% of deaths are created. Just the guy's left by the side of the road. No one knows he rolled the car. And he was social entrepreneur 2016. But one of the tips he gave my audience and me is how does he spot trends? Because he developed Crash Detect purely from looking at trends and
yeah,
getting ideas. So he uses Facebook for that. And Facebook, you can use twofold. So you can share all your boring selfies,
mm-hmm,
or you can tell Facebook what it needs to serve up as far as magazines, other pages, and so on. And if you look at it, yeah, there's an element of your friend stuff coming up, but the bulk of the stuff that serves up in my Facebook is all the Inc. Magazine entrepreneurs succeed. So it's all these business headlines, and it helps me to see, okay, that's an interesting headline, and I'll click through and I'll go and read it. So it helps me to learn, and that was, I thought, was an incredible beaut of how to easily spot and keep yourself
and
fresh.
And then you control what the social media feeds you rather than let it control you.
Correct. Absolutely. So that to me was very powerful and simple advice, which I use.
What kind of routines do you have besides checking on Facebook to see what the trends are? That you find have been instructive, that you've implemented recently, that help you to get things in order, to make less stupid decisions, to declutter your life. What do you do?
Yeah, it's my wife will tell you. I mean, I've got cycles, right? So there's periods where I'm very good at something, and then it's just normal. So
fall off the wagon, like everybody.
Well, it is. So historically, there's been a period where 2 years. Where I went at one stage went vegan, and it's not because of because I don't.
You're challenging yourself,
correct? Okay. And it was had an incredible impact on my energy levels. Even last year, I discovered learned more about intermittent fasting, started playing tennis again after 25 years, started playing touch rugby again. So, and then I tore my Achilles heel all this activity because it's one thing to feel 20 years old and in your mind, the body is different, but it's little things like that. So what I'm trying to do, get back into, and my wife knows it because she'll keep me honest. She'll say, I don't need lich for mensen, but is journaling again. And it's really, it's one of the things that, and when I say journaling, it's more the open pages concept of just scribbling on a piece of paper to declutter the mind.
What do you mean scribbling?
It's just write anything that comes to mind. It's a trick that writers use. It's actually a tip I got on Tim Ferriss's show a few years back, and you just write for 5 to 10 minutes
about anything,
and it just gets everything out of your mind. So it's there's that, and meditation, of course. I don't want to say meditation, mindfulness is something that I did very well at one stage. I could sit still there for 20 minutes at a time. Now I'm struggling with that.
I've tried, I followed all the rules, and there's plenty of good stuff on the internet, right? Plenty.
Yes.
I cannot declutter. Well, I can't stop my thoughts from running away with themselves. I wish I could just find a moment of complete peace. I've never been able to do it. I can't get it right. Even when I fall asleep at night, there's no peace.
So what's interesting about why the journaling? Because I know it works, and I love pen and paper. As much as I'm very much paperless in the business, I hate paper because I lose it and I'm unorganized. But for some reason I just love pen and paper when it comes to writing my thoughts and everything. But why it also encouraged me to start doing it again is that this good old Tim Ferriss, and I always come back to him because he had a huge influence in 2007, just before I left the corporate world. He launched the 4-hour work week at the time. It wasn't even in the UK. I had to get mine from the US. So I started reading the 4-hour work week in December 2007. And that whole philosophy, especially outsourcing, which is still a very big deal in the business and how I do business, influenced me. So I like to get a few tips from old Tim every now and then. And one of the things he recently said is the reason he still writes.
Yeah.
Before you start typing away, I'm talking about writing.
Yes.
It helps you, number one, clarify your thoughts. But number two, it helps you become a better communicator. And that to me was like, what? That's interesting.
How so?
I don't know. That's what he says. Now, whether there's what the scientific reasons behind that, but I know for a fact that we know that once you write it down, you clarify your thoughts by writing down.
Do you think it has something to do with hand-eye coordination? Do you think it has to do with that we're not used to?
I think it's clarifying.
We have to form the words. It has to have a shape. It has to occupy space.
And it needs to make sense. If it's rubbish that you've written down there, it doesn't make sense. So I think it helps to structure thought. And I think it's like a good presentation. I always say, a great presentation is taking an hour's worth of content and putting it in three slides.
It's
a hell of a difficult thing. I recently did my first time I did a presentation here in South Africa at a business event, and it was, how the hell do I get 40-minute talk into four slides? It's very hard. And I think the moment you start writing, it just forces you to streamline your thoughts. And I think once you, if you get the thought and the tongue connected properly, you can get your message across effectively without being lost in translation or whatever.
Okay, so Clip Coast is now onto almost 100 episodes, and I would imagine that there's some kind of golden thread here, even if you didn't start it with that intention. Do you think it's these business lessons, it's these golden nuggets? Do you think it's hearing people's stories? I mean, what is it that you reckon your audience keep coming back for?
Again, it's a great question. I'll answer with an example. So when I started one of the podcasts, and again, the reason I started the podcast, because I was a podcast listener. So for me, that was the go-to medium, the medium of the future. It was a no-brainer. Didn't realize how far South Africa was behind, and not behind in the sense. I know it's good old telecom's fault with cost of data and internet and all the rest. But, so there was a guy, Johnny Dumas, Entrepreneur on Fire, which I enjoyed his structured approach, asking the same questions. It gives the podcast interview, framework and time. And so I decided I'm going to ask the same questions. So not the same questions as Johnny Dumas, my own questions, but so I can make sure I extract that practical information. But most important, we can quantify the data. So we can take that information and we can repackage. So if everyone, we can look at what's the biggest mistake everybody's made. So we can say, hey, let's say it's the first 100 episodes, 100 entrepreneurs talk about their biggest business mistake. Now it becomes powerful and it's, you can zoom in. But then when I joined you guys, and I remember at the time it was like an accident.
Yeah, you came in here and I said, yeah, let's do this. And you said, okay, let's do it. And then it just happened.
It happened. But it was, we said, okay, how long do I have? And I remember Greg still saying, your station, he said, yeah, 22 minutes is the sweet spot for a podcast. So we're going to give you this 30-minute slot. I said, okay, 30, great. And the next thing they said, no, you've got an hour slot. I said, what do you do with the rest? No, we'll play music. And I said, no, you know, I'm going to play music.
Fill it up.
I'm going to fill it up. So what changed? And this was interesting. It went from this 30-minute max, very structured interview to a story.
And to something more conversational.
Absolutely.
Right.
But I can't emphasize that story. It's a people. So now I can spend the first 30 minutes talking about this person's story. What got them to this point?
Yeah.
And in the process, still extract the practical tips. But it was interesting what happened after that. So I don't know. It's a combination of the Gareth Cliff brand. It's this free flow. It's an hour. It's fascinating.
Who are the guests who you've most enjoyed having, and who are the guests that the audience has most enjoyed hearing?
It's difficult. It's very much balanced. I think there's always, you know, big names will jump out. You've got interesting characters like, old Boa Bosch was interesting for various reasons. I think he's very multi-talented, but again, he's got the side business. I think they just won an award for this making, do something to attract her. Which they did. As a matter of fact, it's him. It's his production company for King Price. I'm trying to think now. There's so many people.
Who would you like to have that you haven't had yet? Would you really love
I'm going to take a stab here. So the one guy that I've got lined up, and I've actually had him lined up for a year now, but then, you know, things happened, and we know as Nas Buerta. And Nas is, you know, I've been a Blue Bulls fan since I've been 12 years, since 12, the age of 12. So, I'm a real Blue Bulls fan.
It must have gone really well for you in Bloemfontein.
I grew up in Welkom, learned to fight there. So I wonder.
There are three things.
To defend the Blue Bulls.
There are three things in Welkom. Correct me if I'm wrong. There are circles.
Yes.
Churches.
Yes.
And fights.
Absolutely. And crash cars on the center of the circle because they couldn't make the turn. Four things. But, So Nas was, is because people forget he's a very successful entrepreneur.
Yes.
People forget that. They just see as a TV pundit. So for me,
in some ways, didn't he set the standard for so many other rugby players who came after him who went, what do I do with my career after it's over? Mm.
So
really, they did, most of them just ended up in old age homes. No, they did.
Free. But all the fringe benefits of an old Springbok. But it's, yeah, I think he's got a fascinating story to tell. So Nas is there. The guy I approached very, very early on, and I'm not sure at the time, you know, it was in a few months, and I appreciate it. If you've got a big brand and you're involved in business, you have to be careful. So he's the Jacques Besson guy with Clipgoers, and he's got five episodes. But it was Franco Pina. And again, it's because of the, you know, the history, how rugby made business, that rugby being involved with rugby going professional. I think it's a fascinating story once again. And what was always,
I was too busy doing Pringles ads.
I think he was. But I always look for a connection. I started school in Witbank. So it's always nice for me. It's nice for me to have that. Hey, this guy grew up in Welkom.
So what's your connection with him?
Witbank.
Oh, is he also from there?
He's from Witbank.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, I think he started playing.
Two of you escaped, huh?
We escaped Witbank. I don't know what it's called now. But no, he said no.
He said no.
There's only two people that said no in the 3 years, so I'll leave it at that.
Him and?
No.
The other one you don't care about.
I don't care about, no.
Right. Okay, well, I don't care. Well, fuck him. Well, dude, I enjoy it. I've been a guest on your show. I've thoroughly enjoyed hearing a lot of the episodes. You know, my Afrikaans is good. I can speak it. I can understand.
Are you allowed to tell your audience? Does your audience know you're a Afrikaner?
I've got
blue
some.
Blood.
I've got some.
You're Afrikaner blue blood.
My mother's father's family. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I talk about it from time to time.
And your Afrikaans is very nice.
Ek probeer.
It's lekker.
Ja, is nie altyd goed nie, maar ek probeer. Thank you, Jacques. Altyd lekker om jou te sien.
Dankie, Gareth.
Ons sal baie meer episodes kry. En kom ons maak het 100. Wanneer kom my 100ste?
Ek dink 2 weke.
Mm.
2 weke.
Awesome, man.
Maar dankie. Listen, it's nice to be part of the family.
Sure.
Enjoy the vibe here. It's awesome. It's awesome to be part of the future, so.
That's right. That's right, dude. Very good. It's called Clipcoers. You can get it on cliffcentral.com. It is, and Clipcoers, the name is because you have to grind rocks in order to get ahead and to be the entrepreneur who makes it.
It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Grit and determination. I love it. All right, Jacques Besson, very good. Listen to his show. You'll see what I mean. Cliffcentral.com.